The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards, in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by the 9th of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Table Talk, the Spectator's food and drink podcast. I'm Olivia Potts.
And I'm Laura Prendergast.
And today we're delighted to be joined by Jack Whitehall. Jack is an actor, comedian, presenter and writer. He is particularly known for his roles in Fresh Meat, Bad Education and Decline and Fall, as well as his acclaimed stand-up career and his hit show, Travels with My Father. Jack, welcome to Table Talk.
Hello.
Jack, we always start our podcast at the beginning. What are your earliest memories of food?
My earliest memories of food are probably of my mother cooking for us as kids. She was a very good chef, and I've sort of learned everything that I know about cooking from her. And she was always whipping us up really nice, hearty, homely meals. And I feel like we ate very well as we were kids. And my dad, it's all like lost on him. He likes really kind of bland war food and has taste buds that are shot to bits from years of pickling himself with fine wines. So he has no appreciation of food whatsoever. So I think my mom was just appreciative of having some more happy palates in her children. So she was always very keen to cook for us. And my memories are of us all eating her lovely food and my dad leaving all of it.
And what were mealtimes like in your family?
Like really prescriptive on time. I think that's something that is an abiding memory of growing up and eating in my household, is that like my dad like physically can't put food into his mouth before 1 o'clock for lunch and is unable to eat dinner before 8 o'clock. So I have that sort of ingrained in me. Even now, it feels naughty if I'm eating lunch at midday or having an early dinner. There's something about it that just feels wrong. So I remember that being part and parcel of my dining experience when I was growing up.
And what about school food? Was that a shock to the system after your mum's good cooking, or were you a fan?
Do you know what? Like, I always feel really bad because I can remember at school complaining about it, going, oh God, this food is so bad. And I remember as well at school, like all I ever wanted to do was like go to Pizza Express, or I remember a couple of times I snuck out with my friend to go to the McDonald's in Swindon because we're like, oh, this school food is so bad. And then I went back to Marlborough and I looked at it again and I'm like, wow, you did not know how lucky you were. There was like so many options there. It was like fine dining, and you had salad bars and four or five different hot options. And I remember there being like a whole jacket potato stand that was set up every day. Like you could not be more spoilt for choice. And I remember just being like a brat about the whole thing and thinking, oh God, this is just horrible. These are horrible school dinners. And then realizing once you're out in the real world that actually those were not normal school dinners.
They were pretty good.
Yeah. But did you have a favorite dish at school?
I can't remember. Oh, I remember at my prep school, I think that maybe that was like the first time I came into contact with a hash brown and being really excited by hash browns. You got like two options for breakfast. You only ever got two things of a full English. It was like eggs and sausage, or one day would be like bacon and mushroom. You would only get two at a time for some reason. They never wanted to do the whole full English. So over the course of the week, and the best one was always hash browns and baked beans.
Did you enjoy the sort of sociable aspect of school meals, of everyone kind of eating together?
Yeah, definitely. Those big tables that we used to have at our school, all kind of sitting in the dining room and eating together. It was all very Hogwarts. But yeah, the communal aspect of it, I think, was definitely something that I enjoyed. I was like, and I alluded to it just now, but a lot of my friends remind me of it with quite a lot of enjoyment, that I was obsessed with fast food. Like I was so obsessed with McDonald's, like in particularly when I was a kid, for some reason I was just like, whenever we got home for Exia, I was always desperate to like get to a McDonald's as quickly as possible. Like when my parents used to drive me back to boarding school, I would literally throw a tantrum unless they stopped at the McDonald's services on the way to Oxford. Like I ate so much McDonald's as a child.
What's your go-to order in McDonald's?
Thankfully, that period of my life has changed. My metabolism now does not allow it. Obviously, there have been some late night lapses, and the advent of muck delivery has not been kind. But yeah, it would be a Big Mac burger with nuggets on the side. And then there was a thing as well where if you had a student card, you could get a free cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And yeah, the sneaking out to Swindon, which I did on several occasions with my friends. That was the only real incentive for me to learn to drive, because I could get to Swindon to the McDonald's. But I never did. I never did that. I just had to befriend friends that were able to drive so that I could, you know, ferry me off to the Swindon McDonald's.
And beyond McDonald's, did you eat out at restaurants a lot as a child, or was that not really a part of your experience?
Burger King's, Wendy's, all of the established fast food.
All the big names.
All the big names. Yeah, I think we did eat out a lot when we were growing up. Most of the nice dinners that we would have out would always be like a King Corbin affair. Like, my dad was friends with them. He always claims that he, I think he's not lying, but he was in the Caprice on the first day that it opened. And so whenever we go to like one of, a Corbin King restaurant, they always remind him of that. Or my dad always reminds them more likely that he was there when they were nothing. And he was like their first ever lunch service. And so he's been loyal to them ever since. But yeah, I mean, he loves going to, we all do, like, as a family, like the, you know, Worsley or Delaunay or before that, you know, Ivy and Caprice, and those places were always like the special treat that we would go out to for a birthday or a special occasion.
After you left Marlborough, you took a gap year before then going to Manchester University. What was food? What are your kind of memories of food at that time of your life?
By the way, can I just say, it's also just quite liberating doing this and it being on the Spectator podcast, because these are normally things that I would say out loud and then have to check myself on and be like, oh my God, check your privilege. You just told an anecdote about going to the Caprice. How dare you? But
this is a
safe space for that kind of discussion.
I've never had any kind of podcast or interview where I felt like this. It's why I led with the McDonald's thing. And I was like, you don't need to pretend you love McDonald's. You can talk about the Caprice and the Ivy and the Worsley, and you can be...
You've been looking up the McDonald's menu before, being like, Big Mac, that's a good one to go. We'll say that.
That's the thing to say.
Yeah. They have a terrible wine list in there. Sorry, I forgot what the question was.
After you left school, and you went on a gap year and then went to Manchester University, what was food like at that time of your life?
Went downhill. It was, you know, student living. We lived in this horrible house in Fallowfield, me and five of my friends, and it was just, you know, the pits. We lost a front door once at a house party. That's the kind of establishment we're talking about. And we didn't replace it for, you know, several weeks. We just had an open threshold, and the food was just abysmal. I remember the lowest point was when I think we'd lost or swapped our microwave for something and had no means of cooking any food, and the toasty maker had disappeared under a pile of rubbish. And my friend Freddie, who I live with, who has very, very low culinary standards, wanted to make a toasted cheese sandwich. And he did so by taking a chunk of cheddar out of the fridge, cutting off the mold so he got to the bit that wasn't like rock hard, slicing it up, then putting it into a stale pita bread, then taking the stale pita bread with the moldy cheddar in, inserting it into like a rugby sock, and then treading on it to try and melt the cheese in between the two cardboard-like pieces of pita bread. And then I saw him consume that.
And that does sound like a low point, I have to say.
Yeah, that was
Did he recognise that as a low point, or was that just quite normal?
No, yeah, I think, by that point, I'd just been acclimatised to that kind of behaviour. Yeah, and there was, oh my God, yeah. The Curry Mile, Chicken King, that was like the chicken shop that was at the end of our road. I ate a lot of that and remember seeing it come back up a few times as well. It was not good. It was a dark period in my culinary journey.
Looking at that culinary journey, at what point did you start sort of cooking for yourself in a, I'm going to say, a grown-up way, only in contrast to the sort of Freddy Pitta cheese
line? Yeah, I've retired that recipe.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, once I then moved back down to London and, yeah, relatively early on, I started sort of cooking for myself and trying to sort of up my game. You know, it's hard when I was doing like stand up and being on tour, or even when I was doing like comedy clubs and stuff, you know, it was a lot of work in the evening. So I probably wasn't cooking for myself as much. But when I stopped doing club comedy and going to pubs and bars every night and had a little bit more time of an evening, then I would start, yeah, cooking for myself and not just eating a grubby takeaway at 11 o'clock at night.
And on your travel show with your father, I mean, food must have presumably been quite a large part of it. Did you share lots of meals together, and what was that like? Do you share any kind of similar tastes? Or,
well, that's the worst thing about travels with my father, is that it could have been the most incredible experience for a foodie. And, you know, when we first set out to do it, like, I had illusions of it, you know, being definitely having an element of that, and Netflix were always very keen. You know, they're like, oh, we'd love, you know, some food porn in the show, so try and go to some nice restaurants and try and, you know, eat authentically. And, you know, I wanted it to be, have some, you know, Bourdain vibes. But the problem is, again, like, I'm traveling with Michael, who's just the albatross around my neck and is the least adventurous person ever. And on that first season, when we were going to the Far East, I remember there being like whole discussions about what Michael was going to be able to do. And there was a, you know, the producer's job, like, every day was as much to do with like organizing how we were all going to get from A to B, and the cameras and the, you know, memory sticks and lighting and drones and all of that, like, was always put to one side, because Nikki, who's this amazing producer, spent most of her time like trying to work out in these like regional areas in backwater of rural Thailand whether she could find a restaurant that would serve like egg on toast or something that resembled a Western dish that Michael was going to be able to stomach, and also find somewhere that would serve wine, because he had to have wine at 1 o'clock. So in the end, we'd have to take around a cooler box of wine. And also, we then had to take in transit a lot of like food stuffs that he'd brought out. So I remember there was quite a lot of like going and finding a shop, buying a banh mi, and then like gutting it all and putting in a load of gentleman's relish or corned beef. He had corned beef in a lot of the suitcases. We had like, you know, 20 cans of corned beef that we lugged around the whole of the trip, and I would have to make him corned beef and mustard banh mi at lunch every day at 1 o'clock, and he'd have to drink warm white wine out of a beaker. And I was like, I want to go and find, you know,
quite exotic
great restaurants and eat street food. And I mean, I tried my best to try and not be kind of weighed down by him, but it certainly wasn't the culinary odyssey that it could have been were I not with him.
And Jack, tell us about your food blog, Food Slut, which I think you started during lockdown. Where did the inspiration for that come from?
I mean, boredom and lack of work. yeah, I mean, that was started by me, my friend Marcus, and my brother Barney, who, you know, is also a big foodie, and particularly, you know, we love like, you know, barbecue and burgers, that kind of like American style food. And I spent some time in Atlanta and the South, and they came out and visited me there, and we went to quite a few cool like barbecue restaurants. And yeah, I don't know, we're into sort of that sort of slightly decadent, over the top, gross Americanized food. Yeah, maybe moved beyond McDonald's, but still couldn't outrun my love of a good burger. And so we started like cooking these sort of slightly ridiculous dishes in lockdown, and decided we would collate them on a food blog, because I didn't want to clog up my actual Instagram page with these disgusting creations. And it sort of grew from there. And then we ended up doing a like charity collaboration with the Felix Project, doing some like food competitions. And yeah, I kind of like that community aspect of food on Instagram and online. And
Got quite into it during lockdown because it was a nice, fun distraction. And obviously, we're spending a lot more time at home and a lot more time at the stove. So it was a sort of slightly odd sidestep for me from what I normally do, but certainly was a fun thing to do in lockdown. And then since then, Barney and Marcus have been doing some kind of fun things on it and some, you know, recipes and working with some chefs. They're actually doing something at Taste of London in July. They've got a chef that we've worked with called Tom Bateman, who's really great and is brilliant on Instagram, and has a restaurant up in Stoke. And again, it was just someone that we met on Instagram and really liked and teamed up with him. And we did a pop-up restaurant with him during the last, what do you call it, like the moment in between lockdown, that brief window of freedom that we had last year. We did a pop-up restaurant with him, and then he's coming down and doing something at Taste of London. So yeah, it's been fun. But not something that I envisaged myself doing a couple of years ago.
And finally, Jack, what would your desert island meal be?
Oh, my desert island meal, or water, definitely. You need some of that. I would, is it really corny to like, I say my mum's Sunday roast would probably be my, although this is so contentious, and I can't even believe I'm saying this out loud, but I think my sister might do a better roast than my mum.
See, it's you being contentious, not us now.
That gets back to my mum, that will destroy her. That will destroy her. And to be fair, like obviously everything that my sister has learned has come from my mum, but you know, in some regards, I think she's taken, you know, my mum's core lessons and managed to kind of just add extra textures and layers to some of those elements to a Sunday roast. And I'm digging a deeper hole for myself here. They both taste just as good. So a Sunday roast that had been cooked jointly by my mum and my sister.
Oh, there you go.
Just as good as each other's. I wouldn't know the difference in a blind taste.
And would you have pudding?
Would I have pudding? Yeah, sticky toffee pudding. Just to put myself into a nice food coma. And yeah, lots of red wine. And maybe some chicken nuggets on the side.
Just for old time's sake.
For old time's sake. So I'd have the full roast, red wine, sticky toffee pudding, and then six McNuggets.
Classic desert island meal. Perfect.
Jack, thank you very much for joining Table Talk.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do subscribe. And if you've really enjoyed it, please do leave us a star rating and review. It really helps us out.